Welcome to the Homeschool Loftcast, a podcast presented by the Homeschool Loft in Depere, Wisconsin. Our goal at the Loft is to encourage parents who educate their children at home and let them know that they are both called to and empowered for the task of home-based education. At the Loft itself, we offer one-on-one consultations, book clubs and discussion groups, workshops and seminars, and a curriculum viewing library. Through the Loftcast, we extend our reach to encourage and bless homeschooling parents everywhere.
I'm Noah Tetzner, filling in for Jenny and Tina today, who are taking a much-needed week off of recording the podcast. And I'm so excited to be joined by a very special guest. He's a happy father of five children, a former high school educator, and current homeschooler, and the founder and CEO of the Classic Learning Test, CLT. Jeremy Tate, thanks so much for coming on the podcast.
No, it's an honor. Thank you.
It's a pleasure and a privilege to have you on the show, Jeremy. Well, Jeremy, not so long ago, there were two major exams that a student in the United States was expected to take should they wish to pursue higher education. Those were infamously the SAT and the ACT. Now, you started a competitor exam to the SAT and ACT known as the Classic Learning Test, an exam rooted in the ideals of classical education. What is classical education? It's the way education always used to be, rooted in the fundamentals that make Western civilization exceptional. I'm sure you've told the story of how you started the exam many times, but sort of take us back in time, if you would, to the moment when you realized, okay, there's something wrong here with regard to the SAT and the ACT. There must be a different option.
No, what an honor to be chatting with you today. I don't think I'll ever get sick of kind of telling the CLT story and how we came to exist. The whole thing kind of feels very providential now that we're 6 years into this, but you know, 2015, I was a college counselor at a Catholic high school, Mountain of Sales Academy in Catonsville, Maryland, and I was also running an SAT and ACT prep company. Before that, I had gone to seminary, Reformed Theological Seminary, and decided not to go a pastoral track and found myself in the SAT prep world and enjoyed working with students, but I was really surprised what I saw when I really dug into College Board source material, what they were putting in front of millions of American students, not just through AP, but of course through the PSAT and the SAT as well. And what I saw, at best, it was just boring. But at worst, you had really politically charged bias text a lot. And then you also had a censoring going on. Never once, not once. And since this time, we've actually done audits, College Board source material. You will not find a Catholic or Christian thinker on the SAT or ACT. In fact, you rarely find anyone who's maybe before the beginning of the 20th century. So here you have the two most powerful companies in American education, you could obviously throw Pearson in there as well, that literally censor the entire thought tradition that gave birth to the university itself, the thought tradition that was the tradition of the West, the tradition that has always been the tradition of the church. And, you know, I was at a school at the time where it's great, great school run by these amazing Dominican sisters. And I remember on a few occasions, you know, we would have chat with parents and teachers and the Dominicans. And there was kind of, you know, a joke that was also real because we'd say, you know, if it wasn't for College Board, we would do, you know, more philosophy here. We would do more theology, more religion, more Bible. So College Board really does have a tremendous amount of power and influence over what even, you know, a Christian school in Maryland is doing, right? So the idea with the CLT was pretty simple. Was what if you had a competitor to College Board that instead of driving the academic focus away from this tradition, what if there was a competitor that encouraged a focus on this tradition, the tradition that's always been the tradition? And that's really how we launched. My wife actually says, I kind of woke up one morning and was just saying, it has to be a test, that if you had a test, it could change everything. And this was me just kind of thinking through education, thinking through tests, not just as evaluative tools, but really as pedagogical tools. Tests convey what is important. You know, if students know, man, I'm probably going to see C.S. Lewis or Aquinas or Flannery O'Connor or Frederick Douglass on the most important tests I ever take, that conveys that these texts are of special importance.
Oh, Jeremy, that's so exciting to me. I love everything you've just said, and we'll get into the logistics of the Classic Learning Test and how it can help homeschooling families, but I really just want to take a moment and dig deeper into your personal story to create a competitor to, as you said, the two most powerful educational companies in the United States. That takes a lot of bravery. It sounds like you had sort of an entrepreneurial flair before that with regard to the college prep work you were doing, but how did you go about, and certainly there was some divine intervention, but how did you go about starting the classic learning test?
No, I can laugh about it now, but I think I can relate to Frodo, and that if I would have had any idea how hard it was going to be, I never would have left the Shire. I think starting CLT required, you know, certainly a certain amount of intelligence, but also just a lot of being really dumb. You know, I had no idea the barriers that were in front of us. I had no idea the extent to which College Board and ACT are tied into areas of American life that you would never even dream. Insurance to sports eligibility. I mean, they've got tentacles that are wrapped around absolutely everything. And the amount of money that these companies spend on lobbyists, College Board alone, over $100 million a year to push legislation that requires every public school student in the country, that's their goal, to take these tests as graduation requirements. So, you know, it seems simple. I was very blessed and I knew the first steps to take. I was also a college counselor. And so I knew a lot of people who were in the world of college admissions, and I was able to call good friends at small Catholic schools, you know, Christendom and Wyoming Catholic, and kind of say, if there was an alternative to the SAT and ACT, how hard would that be to change your admission standards? And they said, well, we actually hate the SAT and ACT as well. We would love to change our admission standards to include another option. So there was a lot of goodwill, and there were just friendships in place of people who knew that I was going to try to do this. But really, I think at every step of the way, God providentially provided things that we could not have found, people who understood. And I would also add, you know, Noah, the concept, I thought it at the time was very original, really wasn't that original. I've met so many people over the years who understood that if you had a major rival to the College Board, that it could really create competition, and it could give parents and schools an option to actually embrace an assessment that reflects what they care about, that aligns with their mission, rather than having to feel compromised. So I feel very grateful that we've gotten to where we're at now, 6 years into this, and it's been an incredible way just to experience God's grace.
You've certainly achieved a lot over the past 6 years, Jeremy. If there is a homeschooling family sitting at home or driving around in their car right now listening to this podcast, and that name, Classic Learning Test, that's rung a bell, and they've heard of classical education. Perhaps they don't fully understand what it is. Okay, yeah, our friends do classical conversations, something like that. Could you just sort of break it down for them? What is the Classic Learning Test all about? And as their kids enter their high schooling years, and it's, you know, they're starting to think about post-secondary education, what could the Classic Learning Test do for them?
Yeah, you know, this sounds really strange in hindsight, Noah, but I had taught for 8 years and majored in education before I really became obsessed with the question, what's the point? Like, why are we here? Why are we doing this? And in fact, I would even ask my students on the first day, the last couple of years I was a teacher, I would say, why are you here? Like, what's the point of school? And I wasn't just asking them. I actually was trying to figure it out myself. And they would all say the same thing. They would all say to get a better job. And it started to really, really disturb me. They said it like, we know this already, Mr. Tate, to get a better job, you know, of course, what else would it be? And then I would write on the board, the object of education is to learn to love what is beautiful, Plato, right? And that, you know, realizing that you had baked into these super powerful assessments a philosophy and a vision of education that was entirely utilitarian, entirely about credentialing. If the purpose of education is fundamentally about the cultivation of virtue, then those are the kind of texts students ought to be reading and aspiring to read. And so that's what we did on the CLT. Students who are taking the CLT, mechanically, it's kind of structured like an SAT or ACT, right? We have to have a concordance chart that allows somebody to say, ah, okay, a 112 on the CLT, which is an amazing score, by the way, a 112 would equate to a 1530 on the SAT. So mechanically, things are actually pretty similar. SAT and ACT were obviously way before us. And so they had the opportunity to kind of write the rules of the game. And so some people will say, you do know that a multiple choice test is a product of the Industrial Revolution and everything that went wrong with education. I say, yes, we do. You know, multiple choice is not the greatest thing ever, but we're offering an alternative that has entirely different source material that comes from this tradition. So who are students actually reading? You know, again, they're reading, I think C.S. Lewis is actually the most overused author on the CLT. He's been on at least 5 different CLTs, and there's been dozens and dozens made at this point. Tolkien, we go all the way back. Students are reading Plato, they're reading Cicero, they're reading great works that we say are worthy of their time and their attention, that these are worthy of a young person's mind and their engagement. But then, you know, the other thing we wanted to do, and this was partly because of my own experience as a college counselor, I remember the amount of time I spent on hold with College Board. You know, I would call them as a college counselor, and you're on hold for 45 minutes, and then you finally talk to somebody, and they're just annoyed that you even called. I'm like, this is wild. Like, you're a company. Companies exist to serve people, right? But when you're a big nonprofit, you don't have to exist to serve people. All you have to do is convince state legislators to keep passing legislation that forces people to take your test. They're not focused on a happy customer. They're focused on happy lobbyists and happy lawmakers is what they need at the end of the day, not necessarily happy customers. So CLT wanted to exist entirely in the free market. You know, we said, you know what? We're going to exist to please customers. We say all the time, my staff hears me say it every day, we want to be the Chick-fil-A of standardized testing, right? You've had that experience. I go to Chick-fil-A a lot. You pull up and you're like, man, I'm never going to get to order. And then it's like 90 seconds later, you've got your nugget and your fries and your shake, and they get the sauce right and everything. And it's amazing. They've kind of got the whole customer service thing down. That is where we also really want to be competitive against College Board and ACT, that we can give students a far, far better experience. It is our job to serve them, to make them not feel like another data point, which is what they often feel like with SAT and ACT. And I think that's also been a big reason that we've grown, is that students, even though the CLT is objectively harder as reflective of this kind of education, even with a harder test, it's the preferred test for the vast majority of students who have taken both the CLT and the SAT or the CLT and the ACT.
You've referenced these wonderful authors such as Tolkien and C.S. Lewis and Flannery O'Connor, you know, these great minds that contributed to, I mean, the collection of great books, the great books of Western civilization. Again, if somebody's perhaps not really familiar with classical education yet, but they like the sound of CLT, what does that mean? You know, why would these authors, what do these authors have to do with an exam that a child would take, you know, hoping to go off to college?
Yeah, some of the best, you think about how much prep often a student will do to get ready for these tests, and often these are just kind of wasted hours. They're learning these little tricks and whatnot. What we're saying is forget the prep, read great books.
Oh, yes.
You know? And you gain a fluency with you can pick up Dante, and maybe you haven't read Dante, but you've read from this tradition, and you understand it. So what we want to do is encourage this kind of fluency, a student's ability to pick these up. And it's, you know, this doesn't happen all the time. I understand. My daughter often reminds me, Dad, it's still a test. She'll say that to me sometimes. It's still a test, right? But it does happen sometimes where parents say, you know what, my son was studying for the CLT, and he read G.K. Chesterton for the first time just on the CLT, and wanted to get a book, and I got him a book, and now he's a big fan, and he's reading, you know, the Father Brown series or something. So that is really, really exciting. And, you know, I always like to say as well, I think that testing is extremely, extremely important, but it doesn't have the kind of impact that I think a parent or a school or a headmaster or a great teacher can have. But what we can do is affirm their work. And so a kid doesn't sit down for an important test and say, everything you told me was important wasn't even there, right? We want to be able to affirm them in what they're doing.
I love that phrase that you mentioned, Jeremy. My son was reading G.K. Chesterton preparing for the CLT. If that isn't everything right about classical education and the way that education has always been, I don't know what is. Jeremy, I understand that you are a homeschooling family. The Tate family is a homeschooling family. Tell us a little bit more about your approach to homeschooling classically.
Yeah, so we actually, this past year, we did Mother of Divine Grace. So Laura Burquest, she's a founder of that. And so that's a Catholic classical homeschool model. In fact, Laura's late husband actually was one of the founders of Thomas Aquinas College, which is a great books Catholic college out in California. I always tell people it's my favorite college that I've never actually been to yet, so I need to get out there. But so we had two of our kids in Mother Divine Grace this past year. I had an incredible experience. Actually, this coming year, though, they're all going to be in classical or Catholic. And that's simply because of a numbers game. We've got number six coming in September. And so, you know, I think different phases of life, I think it's likely, you know, who knows, at some point we may go back into the homeschool arena. I think she's looking at having two kids under two and thinking this is going to be mission impossible. Let's get them. And I'm very grateful to Ali Ghaffari. He planted a Catholic K-8 nearby, Divine Mercy Academy in Severna Park, and they're doing great work. So we're so grateful that our children can be in a great classical school nearby. And then my daughter is actually at Mount DeSales, my oldest. She's going to be a rising sophomore. So, you know what? I think that I'm really passionate about this kind of education that's focused on the formation of the human person, that reads from the great tradition. I view education as, in fact, if I could just give you this picture real quick, this was an aha moment for me, Noah. I was at a bar mitzvah. I'd only been to maybe one before. Okay. This. I'm at a bar mitzvah. My daughter's friend, she's getting her, you know, she's, what do you say? She's having her bar mitzvah, whatever. Not getting confirmed. I don't know what you would say. Anyway, during the ceremony, there's this really beautiful moment where the parents, they pass this massive scroll to their daughter. And their daughter was tiny. And so it was actually kind of funny because it was almost like the daughter could hardly carry the Torah. It was huge, right? And as part of the ceremony, I saw that. And I'm like, that's it. Like, that's what education is. It's this passing down of sacred truth and wisdom and culture. The passing down of everything we hold most dear. I am not married to one way necessarily being better inherently. I do love homeschooling. I certainly think that different situations parents can be in, that it might not be the best option, you know, at different times or different phases of life, depending on where various kids are at. And I've been amazed at some of the schools that I have visited. I mean, you visit a school like Veritas in Richmond or any of the Chesterton Academies, it's mind-blowing what they're doing, you know. Starting off every day, I mean, they're singing beautiful hymns to start the day, you know, and you go in there and it gives me the chills to think about just what I have seen as part of this renewal movement. Yeah, it's a great question. Love homeschooling. I have a hard time just processing how much contempt there is for homeschooling in America right now. I mean, I have talked to people who do not think a parent should have the right, the freedom to take their kids out of public school, right? I am grateful for the work of HSLDA and Mike Ferris, what they have done to make homeschooling a reality for so many of us.
Oh, I agree wholeheartedly, Jeremy. And it sounds, everything you said, I agree with, and it sounds great. For those listening, of course, this is the Homeschool Loftcast. And while I was homeschooled and proud homeschool graduate myself, I did attend a classical Christian private school for about 2 years in my hometown of Green Bay, Wisconsin. And I loved that experience. It introduced me to literature, for example, among one of many things that I wouldn't have necessarily come to myself, and I'm referring to the great books. So there is not one way to homeschool, as we all know, and what it really comes down to is about being involved in your own child's unique learning styles and education. So Jeremy, it sounds like you understand that, and very exciting indeed. Now, I understand this, and I know you understand this, that education is not about preparing one for the workforce. It is about preparing one for this human experience, this life that we lead as followers of Jesus Christ. However, if a parent has a student who's very keen on not going to college, maybe they want to enter the workforce right away, maybe they have a trade picked out, they want to go into welding or roofing or something like that, the CLT, I believe, is still the right option, and I know you would say that as well, but why is that?
Yeah, you know, this is a really great question. I love chatting about this. So our most popular test is actually not the CLT. And so we actually have a CLT 10 that's a competitor to the PSAT, and then a CLT 8, which is a competitor to the PSAT 7-8, as they have pushed down into the lower grades as well. And so especially as a homeschooled parent a couple years ago, because we kind of had the feeling at times like we were feeling our way through the dark of like you think that they're picking up on concepts and they're strong in some areas, but you also want that affirmed a little more objectively at times as well. And the CLT 8 was really helpful. And my daughter took it and it allowed us to see visually through, you know, CLT analytics, you know, yes, like she's really strong in math and no, she doesn't show her work and we don't know exactly how she gets her answers, but like things are going on up there, awesome. You know, and she's making these connections and that's amazing. And also, okay, wow, like we knew grammar wasn't a strong suit, and now we're able to see that a little more clearly. So it gave a lot of clarity, I think, just through the analytics. And so I think that's why the CLT 8 especially is utilized so much right now among especially homeschool families. It's really designed to give clarity of you know, it is user normed, so it allows parents to see how, you know, your child is doing academically in some key areas compared to other families who are mostly also homeschooling as well. And I always want to be very careful there, because I think a test score can have a big impact in the way a kid sees themselves, a child, that you can get a low score and you can just think, I'm just a dummy. And it can be really demoralizing. And I have a lot of concerns about that. But so I always want to stress, you know, a test score doesn't define someone. It doesn't signal their worth or their value. It is a snapshot for where a student is at in some key areas academically at a given moment in time. And it allows the student and the parent to identify where they're strong and then maybe what they need to work on a bit as well.
I love that. No, a child's worth or intelligence is not at all defined by their test score. And I love how you put that, Jeremy, that it's merely a snapshot of their present moment. Jeremy, there's so much that we could get into in the short time we have left today in our conversation here today on the podcast. I want to just quickly remind listeners that you can check out the CLT simply at cltexam.com. There'll be a link to that URL in the description of this episode. And Jeremy, I understand you also have a popular podcast that you host called Anchored. Could you tell our ardent podcast listeners about that a little bit?
Absolutely. That's a great question, Noah. Thanks so much. So we launched Anchored about a year ago. And so we had these conversations internally. So I always tell people, like, look, for a lot of people, testing is boring. In fact, some people, you know, would look at me when I'd start talking early on, of like, how are you excited about this? Like, testing is the most boring thing you could possibly talk about, right? And sometimes we would joke, like, what's more boring than taking a standardized test is hearing somebody give a lecture about standardized testing, right? But it's actually fascinating, right? Standardized testing has a huge impact on all of American education. Huge. You almost can't exaggerate how powerful the impact is. And so what we wanted to do is make a shift as a company to do a little more what we would kind of call content marketing. Of kind of get to the reason behind why CLT exists, right? Instead of just saying, hey, we've got a new test, we want to say, no, what we want to do is we want to reintroduce this kind of education to all of America, and we want to do it through the lever of standardized assessment. We think it's a very powerful lever, window, door to reintroduce nationally this kind of education. So we've had amazing guests. We've had Cornell West and Robbie George and Pano Canolas, some really, really great conversations. You know, I think our requirement for a guest is if they value this tradition, do they see beauty in it, right? It's a time right now that we're living through where it's under attack in ways that I don't think it has been, in at least in American history. And I think, you know, the tradition that gave birth to so much of what I think most people love about the West, even if they are attacking this tradition, they love things like hospitals and orphanages and universities, right? These are unique products, you know, of the Western intellectual tradition. So it's been really fun just having chats with people on that podcast.
So cool. So cool. Again, I'll put a link to that podcast in the description of this episode. And I'll also put a link to your Twitter account, Jeremy, and CLT on Twitter, because I love what you're doing there. Like, you know, content marketing, wonderful, big believer, but the way you're doing it is so cool to see. Instead of just posting these social media posts about, you know, the CLT, you're really like showing people the core, the fundamentals of what this exam is all about, the beauty of classical education. I mean, I follow you on Twitter, of course, and just all these little factoids about beautiful things, the classical tradition, literature, beautiful architecture from ancient Greece and Rome. And I think there was something on like a castle from 16th century Germany. That is what classical education is all about. And I absolutely love that. I think it's so cool.
Oh, no, that means the world. And it's always, I love connecting with former homeschoolers. You know, I want to make the case, you know, I run in circles and spend a lot of time with academic heavyweights. But I myself am more of actually kind of a marketing mind. And I love about how do you take something and take it to a massive audience,
yeah,
right? And I think the best way to take classical to the mainstream is by putting young people like yourself who have had this kind of education in front of them and saying, have a conversation with Noah, right? These young people are amazing, right? And I want to say that without bashing, because I met amazing public school students, but there's something really different in students that have had this kind of education. They've been formed in such a way that it can be kind of shocking at times. You know, I remember when I first started to meet these students, I'm like, really? Like, I feel like I'm talking to an adult, and you're like 14 years old, right? I mean, you think about the things that somebody like John Quincy Adams was doing, right? For his dad, when he was 14 or 15, he was a private secretary to the ambassador to St. Petersburg, right? And he's speaking seven languages and doing high level translation. He's 14, right? Compared to what, you know, typical 14-year-old in America is doing today. Like, we have failed young people, but there is this sliver, there's this growing sliver, this renewal movement of young people that they've had this kind of academic formation, spiritual formation. They're going to be the people that are changing the world, I think, you know, 10, 20, 30 years from now.
I agree. I agree wholeheartedly, and I love that so much, Jeremy. Before I let you go, again, listeners, you can follow Jeremy and CLT via the links in the description of this episode. Let's talk about books for a second, because that's a key piece of classical education. An open-ended question at that, but what are some of your favorite pieces of literature from the classical tradition? And, you know, as a homeschooling father and an advocate of classical education, what are some of the books that you've seen really capture the interest of younger children, adolescents?
Yeah, love these. Such great questions, Noah. So I love to kind of tell a story to answer the first part. And so when I was 20 years old, 21, 1 year older than you, Noah, right now, I think, I made a crazy road trip. I can't believe my dad said yes. And I think later on, my parents got in a big fight this. But I drove from Louisiana to Alaska, and I spent a summer living in a tent in Alaska, cleaning fish all day, right? I had a phone, but you couldn't do anything on it, and you could never even get reception anyway. So it was really pre-smartphone technology, right? And in Alaska, it doesn't get dark till midnight or 1 a.m. You can kind of always read in the middle of June in Alaska in a tent. So I was in a tent, and I went to the local library, and I got Crime and Punishment, and there was no competing distraction. All I could really do was read or twiddle my thumb, you know? And it was the first time I had really read deeply. And the work was deeply formative on me, for sure. I grew up with a speech impediment, so I'm always self-conscious to say Dostoevsky, if I'm working on it. I think I got it, right? Read that, read Brothers K all that summer. And yeah, I think just because I was so free from any kind of distraction at all, it was a different experience. You know, I think right now, especially running a company and having, you know, six kids on the way, it's really hard to unplug to that level, where you're so absorbed and caught up in it. But that's what it takes to be really changed by a book. I mean, the conversion of Raskolnikov changed my understanding of conversion and what that looks like, what that means. Another thing that has been great as a parent that I would highly recommend, I did this once and I plan to do it again when my two youngest, we have a big gap in my kids' ages. So they go from 15, 13, 10, 8, and then down to 1, and then a newborn kid coming in September. So we read through the entire Lord of the Rings trilogy and The Hobbit out loud.
Awesome.
I kid you not. About a year and a half or 2 years ago. Noah, I think I was more worn out than Frodo and Sam by the end of that journey. I'm, you know, answering a question like every sentence. It was so rich though. It was amazing. And they're still 2 years later, they spend half their day killing imaginary orcs in the backyard.
So cool.
You know, with their swords and stuff. And yeah, it's great. The world that Tolkien draws you into, you know, a world. And in fact, this is crazy. I'll quit blabbing in a second, but he said this crazy thing. He was like seven when he said this. And he said, I think I know why he, meaning Tolkien, made it a ring. And I said, why? Why did he make it a ring? He said, because it's like you're getting married to sin. And it blew my mind. I was like, that's the most profound thing. Like, out of the mouth of babes.
Yes.
You know, just totally blew my mind.
Oh, I love that. I love that so much. Well, I don't doubt that your own children are of the type you mentioned before. You talk to them and you feel like they're adults. And that's a common occurrence among those classically educated. Jeremy Tate, again, pleasure and privilege having you on the podcast today. I wish you all the greatest success with the CLT, and I'll continue listening to your podcast and supporting you as I can. Thank you so much for coming on today.
No, thanks so much. It was a pleasure.